this week's parasha, Parashat Bo, deals with the last three makos, the last three plagues that befell the Egyptians. And the bulk of the parasha is this 12th chapter, which details for us the Korban Pesach, the Paschal Lamb, the laws associated with the Paschal Lamb, the preparation 4 days beforehand, holding on to the lamb, the shechting of the lamb, the placing of the blood on the doorpost, the sliesh, the roasting of the lamb, all the details connected with it. And then we have really the climax of the entire story of the Egyptian experience. It's the story of the death of the firstborns, the 10th plague, where the Egyptians, in every house there's crying out, the people who have died. The Jews simultaneously are eating the Korban Pesach. God is leaping over Pesach, to leap over, to pass over the houses of the Jews. He himself is smiting the house of the Egyptians, and really end the story with the permission that the Egyptians, not really permission, they're throwing them out of the land, and we have really the end of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, the actual exodus from Egypt. They'll actually leave next week's parasha, B'Shalach. The end of the parasha just deals with a number of laws of the Kedusha, of the holiness, of the Bechor, of the firstborn, as really a replacement for the firstborns that were killed. So now we take that and instill some Kedusha, some holiness in our firstborn animals and firstborn male children. I'd like to deal with today one, and in fact, part of this verse we dealt with at length last year, and I'd like to look at it on a totally different level this year. In source number one, we're looking at the 12th chapter in the laws connected with the Korban Pesach. We have, you shall not leave any of it until morning. Any of it that is left until morning, you shall burn in the fire. And here comes the key verse, chapter 12, verse 11. This is the verse we will deal with today. So shall you eat it, your loins girded, in simple English, you should have your belt on, your shoes on your feet, and your staff in your hand. You shall eat it in haste. It is a Pesach offering to God. And then the pasuk continues, the next verse, I shall go through Egypt on this night, and I shall strike every firstborn in the land of Egypt, from man to beast, and against all the gods of Egypt, I shall mete out punishment. I am Hashem. One very simple question. It's such an obvious question that oftentimes we look at this verse and we don't ask the question because it's so obvious. The question is found in source number two. I was happy to find a source for this question because it's so obvious. So the article Stone Chumash points out that those who ate the Pesach offering had to gird their loins, i.e. have their belts tightened, and be dressed as if they're ready for an immediate journey out of the country. But here's the question. Actually, however, Moshe would refuse Paro's demand to leave during the night, not until the morning would Moses leave. Why then the need to eat the offering in such a manner? We know, and the pasuk tells us specifically, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, in broad daylight, the Jewish people left Egypt. There are three cases of Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. You have by Noah entering into the ark. You have Moshe Rabbeinu dying so that nobody could stop if they would want to. It's Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh in clear daylight. It's not like the Jews left as fugitives in the middle of the night, they're scampering out. No, they left clearly during the daytime. So if they left during the daytime, and Moshe Rabbeinu knew that they were going to leave during the daytime, so then why was it necessary for them to be dressed as if they're going to walk out any minute, right, with their belts tightened, their shoes on, their walking stick in their hand, while eating the Korban Pesach, when in reality there was no thought of them leaving right then and there? That's the question I'd like to deal with today. It seems like such a simplistic question, but such a powerful question. The second part of the question is, what is the significance in these three items? The belt, the shoes, and the staff. What can we learn from all three? So that's our study for today. It seems like a very specific study, but as we will soon see, it really encompasses the entire story of the Egyptian experience and really encompasses what our lives are all about. On the end of the verse, V'achaltem oto b'chipazon, that you shall eat it in haste. A famous medrash that says, to whom is this haste referring to? When we say that they ate it in haste, the chipazon, how are we to understand the chipazon? So there are three opinions brought in the Medrash. Opinion number one, it was the haste of the Egyptians to have them leave. Opinion number two, Rabbi Akiva, it's the haste which originated with the Israelites who were in a rush to leave. And the third opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, it was the haste of the Shechina, of the Divine Presence, that they should leave. Three levels of haste. The Egyptians were in haste, the Jews were in haste, and God was in haste. I'd like to look at this whole issue on two levels. And on level number one, to look at it based on this medrash of three components. The perspective of God, why we had to wear this whole attire, the perspective of the Jews, and the third will also be the perspective of the Jews, but vis-a-vis the Egyptians. That will be level number one. And then we'll move to level number two, which really has more to do with our lives than that which to do with Egypt. Level number one, part A of level number one, from the perspective of God. I'd like to work through a very, very fascinating essay of the Sifti Chaim, Rav Chaim Friedlander, Zichrono Livracha, in an essay called in Chelek Beis, Chipazon Yitziat Mitzrayim, the haste of leaving Egypt, Leidat Am Yisrael, the birth of the Jewish people. Says the Chovos HaLevavos, the Sifti Chaim begins, a very, very important insight into life. The Chovos HaLevavos in Source 4 in the Shar Cheshbon HaNefesh notes, he says, Shetachshov im nafshecha, one should really contemplate with one's own self. I'll call the inyan should you just shave etzlam inyanei yidiat elokim v'tarato. Anything to do with faith, to do with Torah, to do with God, one needs to really contemplate and investigate. And he says, asher yadata me'et narutecha, that which you've known since you were a child, al tanuach datcha amash nistayer belivcha b'tchilat limudecha. One should never rely on one's relationship with God or one's understanding of biblical stories based on that which you were taught as a child. And explains the Sifti Chaim based on the Chovos HaLevavos, it's not only a question of intellectual knowledge. Clearly, as an adult, we're going to read the story of the Jews leaving Egypt and we will study the story on a much deeper intellectual level than a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old is going to study in school. But says the Chovos HaLevavos, and this is so important for our lives because I think we fall so short of this so often. Very often we have established a certain relationship with God. We have a certain image of God based on that which we formed as a child. And it's that image that stays with us throughout our lives. And says the Chovos HaLevavos, that just like as an individual, we need to continue learning and growing and able to develop and deepen our intellectual relationship with Torah and thereby our intellectual relationship with God. So likewise, we have to do the same thing emotionally. If we have a picture of God as this old man sitting with a long white beard, which is a child's view of God, and that's how we look at God when we're 30 and 40 years old, so we've missed the boat somewhere. That understanding of God also has to change, also has to develop. The Chovos HaLevavos speaks about this primarily in the study of Torah and in tefillah and in prayer. Right? If you daven like you daven by rote as a first grader, so again, you've lost it somewhere. So says the Sifti Chaim in Source 5, if this is true of our studying of Torah and our davening, so al achad kama v'kama, how much more so is true of our emunah, of our relationship with God, that we need to develop it and deepen it and understand what the relationship is all about. And that's why, says the Sifti Chaim, the place to really study on a mature level and to really continually understand what God is all about is to study the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, the exodus from Egypt. Because as we know, very famous understanding of the first of the Ten Commandments or Tadden utterances of Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Oseisicha Meretz Yitzrayim, in Source 6, that I am the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt, and the famous question that Ibn Ezra brings, why does God say that I am the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt? Why not I am the Lord your God who created heaven and earth? To which this Ibn Ezra responds, because we did not see God create heaven and earth. We saw God take us out of Egypt. The exodus from Egypt was an experience where we all experienced the hand of God, where we all saw God functioning in a level of Ashkacha Pratit, in divine providence. We saw in last week's parsha, these had wild animals, these didn't. These had blood, these didn't. Our parsha, it's even difficult for a human mind to grasp that the very place that had darkness for the Egyptians, that very place was light for the Jews. These are all examples where we see God is very much involved, Hashkachas Hashem, in this world. We also see God has the ability to change nature. God functioning in this world, and very much in the world, that in the arena that we live in, is found in the story of Egypt. And that's why if you want to really develop and deepen your relationship with God, so says the Sifrei Chaim, study the story of Egypt. Study it on a level not of a 7-year-old or a 10-year-old. Study it on a level of an adult with mature understanding that wants to understand God better. It says the Sifrei Chaim in source number 8. I'll tell you really, really where you should look. If you think you see God, when you think about the exodus of Egypt, you think you see God in the 10 plagues, and in the crossing of the Red Sea, well, that's where I should look to find the hand of God. So then you've missed the point. Because the Pasuk tells us every day we are commanded to remember at Yom Seitzchem Eretz Yitzrayim, the day we left Egypt. We're not commanded every day to remember the 10 plagues. We're not commanded every day to remember the splitting of the sea. We're commanded to remember the actual exit from Egypt. Ah, what was so special about the exit from Egypt? Well, that's the whole point. We don't learn enough. We don't know enough. If we would understand that it's the Exodus itself that has the greatness in terms of our relationship with God, so then we're understanding it on a much more mature level. Now let's talk English. What was the greatness of the experience of the Exodus of Egypt where we're able to find God and find a relationship with God? So the Sifrei Chaim quotes a famous Midrash, but it's probably the best example to illustrate our point that God took us out of Egypt like an ubar mimei imo, like a little infant leaving its mother's womb. So we've all experienced the birth process on some level or another, and we know the miracle involved wherein a child who was nourished from the mother, getting all sustenance from the mother, suddenly, within almost a split second, everything that was open shuts down. Everything that was shut down suddenly opens. And we have a whole new experience where now the child is on its own. That is really the experience of Egypt. Where till now we are so consumed by Egypt and so consumed by the culture of Egypt, within moments we are transformed from that experience to a child who is able to exist and subsist on their own. What was the means, the transition between the two? So clearly, as he says in the arrow in 9, Ematai hayu Yisrael la'am, when were the Jewish, where the asterisk is in 9, when were the Jewish people a nation? B'sha'ash amdu al saf ha'yitziyam Mitzrayim, when they stood on the threshold of leaving Egypt. V'akadosh baruch hu tzival lahem mitzvot, and they had commandments to do. Az ne'yu la'am, then they became a people. Am Shiyeshlo Mitzvot Mishalo, a nation which has its own commandments. Yeshlo Gam Chayut Mishalo, it has its own energy, its own life force, it's able to develop on its own. Now we come to our key point. When God gave the Jewish people mitzvot, when God created this nation, the beauty is that He did it almost immediately. It wasn't a process where God said, okay, let's form ourselves into a nation. Let's see how we get along together. Okay, now I'll decide what are some laws that will be good for you. In many nations, we see this today even in America, that the government is still evolving in laws and in amendments and changing laws and changing amendments based on the needs of the people. The whole concept of a Supreme Court. Judaism doesn't function that way. In reality, we were given immediately a system where God knew exactly what it means to be a Jew. What does it mean to have Torah and mitzvot? This is really the cornerstone of what the Egyptian experience is about. Where God immediately chose us as a people, swooped us up, gave us commandments, and said, "Pump, you're a nation." It happened so quickly. It happened so immediately that you don't even realize it was happening. And that, says the Sifrei Chaim based on the Maharal, is really the essence of the Egyptian experience. He quotes the Maharal in Source 12 where he says, over and over again, the word that's used to describe the Egyptian experience is the Chozek Yad, is the strong hand of God. Explains to Maharal, what is the strong hand of God? It's the Bechozek Poel B'mehirut L'fi Chozek Pulato. It's the quickness of God, where He acts very quickly without wasting time, which is what Chametz Matzah is all about. Chametz, leavened bread, takes time. Matzah is quickness. The whole Egyptian experience was creating a nation quickly, not schlepping it out, not wasting time. And that, says the Sifrei Chaim based on the Maharal, answer number one, why was it necessary for the Jews to be dressed with their shoes on their feet and their belt tied and their walking stick in their hand? He says in the asterisk in 12, the le'echol b'chipazon, to eat it quickly, shehi mihirut gamkein, which is also reflective of quickness. V'hakol, all of it, kedei litabek b'midah shemimenu hachozek lotzi otam b'mihirut. We are dressing quickly. We are acting with quickness. Our whole essence about us, even though we're not leaving, it's irrelevant if we leave or not. We are dressed to leave. That shows we are ready at any moment to be out the door. Our physical dress, our manner of eating, is a reflection of the way God was taking us out quickly, where God was forming us as a people quickly. So on this level, our physical action is but a reflection of what was going on in Shamayim, where there was this tremendous speed to create us as a nation. A tremendous speed, the speed again, the imagery of the infant who immediately is no longer dependent on the mother, but lives on its own. That immediacy, that quickness, is the experience of the Jews leaving Egypt. I will note, because it's wild, and I'll be honest with you, I've never heard it before, but it's wild. It's gorgeous. There's a Targum Yonasan, Ben Uzio, who says, I have a little secret for you. You know, in fact, the Jews did leave Egypt that night. They were dressed to go and they left. Let's take a look at Targum Yonasan. 14 arrow. Based on the verse, you have saw how I've carried you on the eagle's wings, says the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, Atem re'item ma she'asiti l'mitzrayim v'nasati etchem al ananim. I've carried you on the clouds. V'hovalti etchem l'makom beit hamikdash. And I carried you that night to the Temple Mount. La'asot sham et ha'pesach, to do the Paschal lamb there. U'be'oto laila, that very night, Hishpati etchem l'flison, misham kirafti etchem l'mutara. And then at that night, I return you once again to Egypt in order to have a relationship to bring you closer to Torah. Wow. Amazing, Targum Yonasan. We left that night. Belt was on, shoes were on, walking stick. We were ready to go, and we left. We left to go to eat the Paschal lamb, where the Paschal lamb will be eaten in future generations on the Temple Mount. What does this mean on a deeper level? What is the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel telling us? Very simply, he's telling us that the creation of the nation was not only above time, that it happened so quickly, it was really above place too. It was moving the world to God's needs. It wasn't as if we were constricted by time and place. God was creating a nation on God's terms and not on the way we normally understand what life is all about. Concludes in 15, Lo rak l'mala me'ateva, it's not only above nature, ela gam l'malat hazman u'l'malat hamakom, above time and above place. Level number one is to understand that when we look at the story in the Torah, and the whole Pesach experience, and as we read the Parsha of the week, we can't just be happy to read it on the level we read it as children. When we read the Parsha, feel the tension in the Parsha of the quickness of how quickly Hashem wanted us to leave. that God's skipping over is that beat that's really the theme of the parsha, which not only God is skipping over the houses of the Jews, God is really medaleg al harim, he's skipping over the mountains, embracing us in order, the chipazon ha-shechina, the quickness of the Shechina, to make us a nation. And everything that was surrounded with that night was the concept of quickness. We ate it quickly. We ate it ready to leave. All of this is reflecting God's, so to speak, mindset, kivyachol, of trying to create us so quickly as a nation to become His, that the geula comes, redemption can come, keheref ayin, as a flash of the eye. What this should bring within us, it's a tremendous appreciation of the love and concern that God has had in forming us as a people, the special care He took in forming us as a people. The story of Egypt is a story of relationship with God. It's a story where we need to open ourselves up emotionally to this relationship with God. And that's why in this new book of Rabbi Tatz, The Teenager's Guide to Jewish Thinking, which is, on one level, a synopsis of Living Inspired, the world math books we've used in the past, but it has a number of chapters that are new, that are not found in the other two books. And one of them is a chapter, a new chapter, on faith. And he says in 17, the Jewish answer to this question, is that what we call emuna, faith, has nothing to do with the word faith or belief. We do not speak of blind faith or personal subjective faith. We do not commit ourselves to something that is a product of anyone's imagination. We have not committed ourselves to Hashem throughout history because we decided subjectively and personally that such a commitment was a good idea. Our commitment is based on knowledge, b'yadata yom, you shall know today, of the clearest to most subjective kind. We assert that the object of our faith can be proved and known. And one of that ways, as he mentions in 18, is we met him. The Jewish people stood at Sinai and experienced a direct revelation. And part of that Sinai experience really began in the Exodus of Egypt. Our relationship with God is not just a relationship of faith. Our relationship with God is based on the concept of knowledge. We've known God, we've experienced God, we feel God. Ah, so then what faith is all about? We all speak about having faith. So how do we understand faith? So he says something very important in 19. If we say that proof exists for that which cannot be seen directly, then what is faith? If the Jewish people know Hashem, as we have discussed above, and again I invite you to read the whole chapter, what is left to believe? Why talk of emunah if we really mean knowledge? Why call it faith? Call knowledge of God. So the answer is a very important answer. He says, the answer is that emunah does not mean faith. Faith or belief, as these ideas are understood in the modern culture, have nothing to do with emunah. The correct translation of emunah is not faith, but faithfulness or loyalty. The concept is this: when you have acquired the spiritual knowledge, when you know clearly that what meets the eye is not all that there is, when you know that Hashem exists and you know that He expects of you, the question then is, will you be loyal to that knowledge? Will you live up to it? Will you fulfill your obligations? The problem of emunah is not how to gain the knowledge of the spiritual world. It is the challenge of being faithful to that world and its obligation. And one of the best examples that he gives, if you take a look, and there are a number of psukim, I quote one here, where you have the word emunah in Chumash. So one of it is the war of Moshe with Amalek, right? Where Yeshua is fighting Amalek. And Moshe Rabbeinu is standing on the mountaintops with his hands high, right, where the people then direct the prayers upward. So the verse says, Vayhi yadav emunah ad bo ha-shemesh. And his hands were emunah until the sun came up, or bo ha-shemesh. So the question is, were his hands having faith? Were his hands believing? Of course not. Rather, he says in 21, emunah derives from the same root as ne'aman, meaning faithful or loyal. And that's what the verse means, and his hands were loyal until until the sun went down. They remained loyal to their task. And that's why a unique feature of being human is that you can know something with total clarity and yet completely act against that knowledge. It takes work to live up to your knowledge of the truth, and that work is emunah. And this, my friends, is level number one. Level number one is the understanding that the story of the Egyptian experience, the Parsha Bo, all these parshios, have to awaken within us a certain more sophisticated understanding of our relationship with God. Understand that this is our ability to know God in these parshios. How God has chosen us and created us like that little baby instantly in order to be His. This has to bring to us a cognizance of the knowledge of God, and then after learning these parshios, ask ourselves, okay, if I understand that God is so involved in our world, if I understand we have a relationship with God as a people and all that He's done for us, so now what? Where does that leave me from here? How am I acting differently because of it? That is what Emunah is all about. How are we acting now based on this understanding? According to level number one, then, this would reflect the belt. We know that in Hasidim we are gartel, that the belt is the connection of the upper and lower worlds together. This is level number one, where we take the upper and lower worlds, we connect them together and say we have a relationship with God. Now let us act based on this relationship with God. That is why, for example, the prophet par excellence, who really tried to bring heaven and earth together, is Elijah the prophet, who the Navi describes as being one who wore a belt, because the concept of a belt is the connection of the upper and lower world. The Jewish people wearing a belt, putting on their belt on the first level of saying, I'm ready for a connection with God. I'm ready to understand that this experience this evening is going to be an experience of knowledge. And now the question, the challenge, is what am I going to do with that knowledge? There's a great story, which will be a segue into level number two, of a type roper. What do they call it? Tight rope walker. Good. Who set up a string across Niagara Falls. And he walked across it. And that attracted some attention. And he walked across it again. And well, now he's had more of a crowd. And then he walked across it backwards. And by this time, even, you know, the hardcore ones said, wow, this guy's pretty good. And he turned to them and said, how many of you think I'm the best around? Well, quite a number of them raised their hand. So he said, okay, I'm now going to do it hopping. And he hopped across. And he hopped backwards. He said, okay, now how many of you think that I'm really the best? Well, a couple more hands went up. He says, okay, now I'm going to do it blindfolded. Looks blindfolded there, blindfolded back. Now how many of you think I'm the best? Pretty impressive. He said, okay, now I'm going to go in a wheelbarrow. And he wheelbarrows across one way and wheels across the other. Now how many of you think I'm the best? Well, now every hand was up. He says, okay, now that you all say I'm the best and you all, you know, believe that in my abilities, how many of you would now like to join me in the barrel going across? How many people raised their hand? Zero. That's really what life is about. You can believe all you want. You can even know. Here he's showing you that he's pretty, pretty talented. But if you're not going to act on that, we call it garnished. It means nothing. Level number one is knowledge of God. Level number one is looking at the story and saying, wow, I really see there is a God I see is involved in my life. But then that has to bring us to level number two. Now what? How are you going to translate that into action? And that's why we come to level number two. On this level, the chipazon, the quickness of the Jews. Let's look at the story of the belt, the shoes, and the staff from the perspective of the Jews. The Sforno, the Alshech HaKadosh really echo one idea, and I think this is key idea number two. Let's take a look at the Sforno in 24a. Your loins girded, prepare to travel. To demonstrate implicit trust in God, the Blessed One, preparing themselves for the road while they were still in prison. And as the Alshech notes in 25, the whole performance was also an act of faith. Since they ate the Passover before midnight, they did not know yet how Paro would react to the plague of the firstborn being killed. Says the Alshech very clearly. even before they knew the end result of the evening. So far, all these major plagues have come, and they're still in Egypt. Even before the story of how God came down and smote the Egyptians, the Jewish people are dressed in this mode, and this is their way of the saying, we know you are going to take us out. We are prepared that this is going to be the final plague. We are showing our own faith in you, God. And again, I hate using that word faith. We are demonstrating our relationship with you, God, by preparing to leave even before we know for sure we're going to leave. Even before, you see, it's no kunst if Paro says, okay, leave. And then they start eating the Paschal lamb and they're all dressed to go. That's no kunst. They already have permission to leave. The kunst is even before you know you have permission to leave, even before you're given that final green light to go, you still say, you know what? I know it's God has promised me that tonight's going to be the night of redemption, so I'm going to prepare myself to be redeemed. How am I going to prepare myself? I'm going to get dressed as if right now I'm going to leave. It's irrelevant if they leave right now. That's aside from the point. The point is, are you demonstrating physically that you believe in God, that He is going to take you out? So on this level, they're getting dressed up in this attire. It's irrelevant if they leave or not. It's rather their demonstration in physical action that they believe in God and that they believe that tonight is going to be the night of redemption. And I think this second level is really the next step from level number one. If level number one is to have a cognizance of God, so level number two now is to get dressed up and to act based on that understanding. There's an absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous piece in the writings of Rav Kook. Rav Kook writes in Igrot HaRiah, in source 26, he says, "V'az hineni ro'eh chov kadosh." I see it as a holy obligation. "La'ashrish b'leiv kol mamikei da'at," to really implant in anyone who is of thinking nature, "shehabasis shal yahadut," the key, the basis, the understanding of Judaism is two words. "Hi ha'reshit v'ha'achrit," is the concept of beginning and the concept of end. What does reshit and achrit mean? Ah, it's beautiful. He says reshit in 27 is the yearning, longing, and passionate desire for a relationship with God. It's all our she'ifot haruchaniyot, all of our spiritual ambitions to connect with God. But you have to take that reshit and put it into an achrit. You have to take that reshit and put it into actual actions. You have to take those yearnings, take those thoughts, and now put it into the world of practice. And that's why he says in 28, according to the world view of Judaism, it's not enough to just contemplate and think about God all day. The concept is, how are you going to act? How are you going to draw the reshit into the achrit? How are you going to take that inspiration and put it into the world of action? And that's why, says Rav Kook, that the real beauty of the story of the Akedas Yitzchak, of the binding of Isaac, we all think that the story is about how he lifted up his hand and he was about to slaughter Yitzchak. And then, you know, it's like anticlimax. He takes the aisle instead, the ram instead, and, you know, he offers that up. No, 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 my friends. The taking of the ram is really the beauty of the story. Because what is Avraham Avinu doing by taking the ram, says Rav Kook so simply? He's taking all of those passionate feelings he has for God. Can you imagine how much emotional and spiritual energy is found in Avraham Avinu at this point? And he's able to take all of that spiritual, emotional energy and put it into the ram. That's what Judaism is about. It's taking that energy and putting it into the ram. And that's why if you look carefully at the story of the Akedah, the great promises that Avraham gets at the end of the story of the Akedah doesn't happen right after he lifts up his hand and the angel stops him. There the angel just says, don't touch the boy. A second angel has to come and say, now I'm going to give you great promises, how you're going to multiply and inherit the land, etc. Because now that you've taken your passion and put it into the world of action, so now the promises which were on a level of potential will now be given over into the level of the actual. And this is echoed very briefly in Rabbi Jacobson's book, based on the writings of Lubavitcher Rebbe, Toward a Meaningful Life, where he says in 33, wouldn't it have been simpler if God had only required that we know Him instead of having to actualize that knowledge? Why must the deed be so essential? So he explains, a little esoteric, but very important. He says that God desired to have a residence in the lower worlds. The reason there can be a dichotomy between human thought and action is that God created dichotomy in the cosmic order of divine expression between the spiritual and the material. While God's wisdom and sublime dimensions predominate in the spiritual realms, an essence of God is expressed in this lower world, the world of action. The material world is the final loop of God's complex cosmic circle, the last section that must be completed to achieve true unity. And because this world is the most tangible, finite portion of His creation, the divine essence is expressed in tangible and finite terms, and that is human action. Were we to limit ourselves to study, to accumulate knowledge without implementing it, we would never realize the intention of our entire existence. The most brilliant thoughts and virtuous intentions cannot on their own perform a single act of charity. They cannot reach out to another person with love. They cannot change the world. What God wants from us is to take that world, that upper world, that world of knowledge of God, which is step number one, to know there is a God. Now faith, emunah, is okay. Now that you know there is a God, now that you have those passionate feelings, now that you re-examine your relationship with God and studying the parashios, now what? Now take those feelings, the reishit, and turn it into an achris. Take those feelings and now put it into lemaisa, put it into the world of action. And that's why he says, if a philosophy in 36 is not applied, its truth becomes dubious. For without representation on a practical level, the philosophy, like the architect's unconsummated plans, is empty. If a person is arrogant to others, or lacks sensitivity, or simple manners, then his wisdom has no value. And he ends his essay so beautifully in 37a. He says, tomorrow morning, before you engage in any intellectual inquiry, do a good deed. Simply do it, and you will see how it enriches your outlook on life. Remember, the essential thing is a deed, for a deed has the power of the divine. If the first level is knowledge of God, then the second level is the Jewish people actually actualizing this relationship with God, this understanding that tonight we're going to be redeemed. It doesn't matter if we actually walk out now, we're showing that we really hold on to what God is telling us. We are going to dress as if we were walking out. This is the world of taking the thought and knowledge of God and putting it into the world of action, which clearly relates to the shoes. As the Malbim speaks about, it's a very Kabbalistic concept, very famous concept, in the story of Moshe having to take off his shoes by the burning bush. So why did he have to take off his shoes? So says the Malbim in 37b, he says, Shehagviyan yikreit b'shem na'al. Our body is called a shoe. Sha'al raglei ha'neshama haruchanit. It's as if our body is the shoe for our spiritual souls. She'i efshar, because it is impossible la'neshama, for our souls, la'mod b'olam ha'gufim, to stand in the world of feet, of world of bodies, shumalei refesh vatit, that's full of all this muck and gook, hamazikim, that really interfere with ruchnias, without below hagufa chomri shu yidroch b'na'alayim betit hayaven ha'olam. Our soul, if it was just left to wander through this world, would meet up with a lot of dirt, a lot of mud, and a lot of impediments along the way. Our soul needs a shoe. Our soul needs a body, and the body is manifested as a shoe to walk it through this world, to guide it and protect it. It's a very spiritual concept, and it gets into, and I'll just touch on it, the concept of, in the story of Yibum and Chalitza, where their childless couple dies and there's no, and the brother has to marry this woman, the husband of the childless couple dies. So if he doesn't want to marry her, they take off the shoe of this individual. Because again, the shoe represents the ability for this soul to have a meaning, have a purpose, have a standing in this world. You don't want to marry this woman. You don't want the soul of the brother to come down again. It's as if it has no standing in this world, which is represented by the shoe. So the shoe on a Kabbalistic level represents the world of action, the world of the body, which is again relates to what we're speaking about. It's not just enough to have a bell to connect the upper and lower world. How are you now in the world of practical going to take that into our world, the reishi, the relationship with God, into the achrit, into the world of action, and that's by having a shoe bringing it down into this world. But then there's the third step. The third step, and then we'll get to the second level very briefly. Why do they need to wear their shoes, their belt, the walking stick if they're not going anywhere? One level, represent God's quickness. Second level, to show their understanding that they were leaving tonight. Here's the third level, found very fascinating. Rabbi Eliyahu Kito, Sefer Parshios. He says, "Kacha tochlu oto." This is how you shall eat it. Lo l'shem tanuga chilas, verse 38. Not for the benefit of eating. B'hatarat chagura b'shlifat na'alayim. Locate. How do we normally eat? So when we come home, many of us take off our shoes and put on our slippers. We relax, put on a robe. We do things to eat in a relaxed manner. Most of us do not have our overcoat on, our shoes and our walkie stick in our hand, and then we're eating in the other hand. It's a little silly way of eating almost. It shows that you're not eating in a comfortable way. But that's the whole point. Why? Matnechem chagurim b'chipazon l'shem mitzvah bilvad. You're eating this Korban Pesach to do the will of God and God alone. Because Shekein Pesach Hu LaHashem, the end of the verse, it's a Passover for God. Because God is skipping over the houses of the Jews to smite the houses of the Egyptians. Ve'eino b'din, it's not proper. Shemaseh, this action. Sheyeshbo paranu l'maseh yadai, that people are suffering, that you should eat in an enjoyable manner. Very fascinating at Rabbi Eliyahu Kito. Why aren't they supposed to eat in a relaxed manner? It was in the schus, it was in the merit of them doing the Paschal Lamb that God skipped over their houses and smote the Egyptians. The very thing that's going to be a protection for you and at the same time is going to be a vehicle of punishment for someone else, you're now going to sit down and enjoy your meal? A chutzpah. This is Jewish sensitivity. People are suffering out there, so yes, you have to eat the Paschal Lamb, but you're not eating it with your feet kicked up and enjoying yourself. You're eating it in a little bit of an uncomfortable manner to show that the only reason you're eating it, it's not a feast of celebration. Let us not think that the Korban Pesach was the Jewish people having a lamb saying, we're now celebrating, we're leaving Egypt. Not at all. We're eating it, and we're eating it for God alone. And how are we going to show that we're eating it for God alone? That we're going to eat it in a manner that's not really comfortable for ourselves. And here, just one small idea, the Sfas last page in 39 notes. In reality, this is true of all mitzvot, where the arrow is. Vayinyanhu ki vadai ikar ha-mitzvah hu tzarech gavoa. The point of doing all mitzvot is really to benefit God. V'tzarech ha-adam lasot ha-mitzvah l'shem shamayim. We need to do the mitzvot for the sake of heaven, bilvad only. About hachanat hamitzvah, the preparation for the mitzvah, v'atshuka kodem hamitzvah, and the desire before the mitzvah, and the feelings we have after the mitzvah, misazeh naseh malbush hanefesh hamitzvah notenet bracha lefaneh v'lachareha. That's where we get the enjoyment. And I think this is a very important third part of our triangle today. If the first part of the triangle is to learn the story of Egypt, to know God's relationship with us, to inspire us to come closer to God, we then need to take that inspiration, reishit, achris, and put it down into this world of action. But here comes the key. So very often when we get carried away in the world of action, we forget for whom we're doing it. We forget why we're doing the mitzvah. We're so inspired, we're so in love with God that, you know, I'm going to give charity. Great, that's wonderful, please give charity. But very often, along the way somewhere, the transmissions get a little bit haywire, and we suddenly get into giving charity because we feel good about giving charity, and we feel good about doing this commandment. comes along this third aspect of the Korban Pesach and says you're eating in an uncomfortable manner to remind you that in essence all mitzvah observance is to do it to bring you back to the first part of the triangle. You're doing it to have a relationship with God. You're doing it for God's sake. Yes, you'll have enjoyment in the preparation for it and getting involved in thinking about doing the mitzvah and all the aspects attached to the mitzvah. But never lose sight that the mitzvah itself has to be for the sake of God. Never lose sight why you're on this earth. Never lose sight that it means taking our faith, means taking our knowledge of God, bringing it into the world of action to once again reconnect to God to form a perfect triangle. And on this level, this is represented perhaps by the matzah, by the stick in their hand. We know, very briefly, Rabbi Tatzin, living inspired, where he notes that God originally created the world in Source 40 straight. This finite physical world represents the bending of that straightness. And once a bend has occurred, there's a danger. To straighten what is bent, that is our task, to bring the world back to that finite understanding of God. Not to be deceived by a bend in the road, and that's the name of the Jewish people, Yisrael Yashar Kel, the straight one of God. And indeed, that's what a matzah is about in 41. The word matzah, staff, is from the root meaning natet, to bend, or to tend in a particular direction, or to stretch out from a source. And in fact, a staff is really a branch, that which branches away from the trunk. Where do we get a staff from? The tree trunk that bends away. So the matzah somehow stands at the junction between heaven and earth. It is located at the point where the straight bends. And this is the third aspect of the symbolism. Once we've had the belt connecting the upper and lower world, we can now take that understanding and put it on our feet, on our shoes, which represents the world of action. But the key then is to take the stick in our hand, the stick which has the ability to bend, and to remember that we shouldn't get lost in the world of the bending, in the world of our egos, in the world of doing things to make ourselves feel good. Remember to stretch that staff back to its source, back to God, to the world of the straight, to the world of the pristine, the world of the clarity that we spoke about at length last week. So that's level one. That's level one. To summarize level one, and then very briefly, in a minute or two, we'll do level two. Original question, why, if the Jews weren't going to leave until the morning, why are they getting dressed in this fashion? Level number one is to reflect God, who was moving with such alacrity this evening, and we are dressing to reflect this quickness of how he took us out as a people, the model of a newborn baby. Level number two is that we are getting dressed this way to show how we really believe that God is going to take us out. We're acting on this knowledge. We're acting on this belief. We are dressing ourselves up to say, God, we are ready. Even before we know how power is going to respond, we're ready to follow you, God. And level number three is to say we're not doing it for ourselves. The feast is not for ourselves. It's clearly for the service of God, which translating into our lives is the concept of relationship with God that we always have to work on. Let's not be satisfied with that relationship of a young child. Let's learn, let's develop, let's deepen. Take that passion and bring it to the world of action. That's what God wants from us. Give the charity. Don't think about how wonderful it is to give charity. Put the money in the pushka. But then understand that you're really doing it for the sake of God and not yourself. Yes, there's a tremendous amount of pleasure inherent in the mitzvah, in the preparation of the mitzvah, and how you feel afterward. But the essence of the mitzvah itself has to be the Shem Shemayim for the sake of God. The second level is based on the writings of Lubavitch Rebbe in the Inside Story, where he says that this verse is really a model of what life is all about for ourselves. So if we step out of the Egyptian experience, we understand this verse as a call to every Jew for all generations. And he says in 42, the Exodus marks our birth as a nation, the time when God extracted a people, as he spoke about, out of the bowels of another people, granted them the gift of freedom, and empowered them to realize his goodness and perfection in their own lives and in the world. The key theme in the story of the Exodus is haste. We are described as having fled from Egypt. Matzah is the bread that didn't leaven because we were driven from Egypt and could not tarry. Passover resolves around the eating the Paschal lamb, which was eaten in haste. The alacrity of the Exodus emphasizes that life for the Jew is never again to be the passive and static experience it was for the clan of Hebrew slaves under Egyptian bondage. Life is to be a vigorous, vibrant movement forward, an unceasing quest to advance and achieve. So on a beautiful symbolic level, says Lubavitcher Rebbe, that the story of the Exodus from Egypt is really a story about what life is about. Life is not about being passive slaves. Life is about the vibrancy inherent in these verbs of haste, in the actions of movement. What God calls us all to do in life is to move forward, to advance, and to achieve. And that's how he says that we can understand on what levels we need to achieve with these three items: your hips girdled, your shoes on your feet, and your staffs in your hand. These correspond to three dimensions of forward movement of our lives. The first forward movement has to be self-development. The second one has to be our effect on our immediate surroundings, our family, our social and work spheres, and the third on universal impact. We all impact on the whole universe. And those are the three items. The hips, which are the base that holds up the entire body, represent the human being as an individual. Your hips girdle thus refers to the endeavor to develop our personal potential. On the first level we need to achieve, we need to move forward in the level of the belt of preparing yourself, girding yourself, that you can move forward in self-perfection. In 45, the feet are the person's means of locomotion. Equip the feet with shoes and you enable them to traverse hostile terrain that would otherwise impede their movement from place to place. Shod feet thus represent our ability to journey from the enclave of self to points beyond the range of a barefoot, home-bounded personality. Shoes allow us to move out beyond ourselves. But man is more than a foot traveler in life. Man is unique among his fellow creatures in that he makes extensive use of tools, implements he fashions that enable him to manipulate his environment in ways he could not with his own body and faculties alone. Look at the world of the computer, you really see the truth in this. Therein lies the significance of the third marker of the alacrity of the Exodus. Your staff's in your hands. The staff represents the uniquely human conviction that nothing is impossible, that we can always find a way to extend our reach beyond the distance dictated by our natural arm span. The staff allows us to move beyond ourselves, that we each possess the capacity to positively influence all people, elements, and events of our world, no matter how distant and unrelated to our lives they may seem. So on this level, I think it's a very sweet level. What the Rebbe is saying is that this model of leaving Egypt is really symbolically a model of what life is all about. Life is about moving forward. Life is about always developing, always growing, not being in that slave-like mentality of sitting back and saying, I give up, I have no hope. Time is to move. Time is to create. We're here for such a short time. We need to be able to create on three levels: the hips, the belt, ourselves, the shoes, the world right outside of us, and the staff that extends beyond, is understand that that which we do in the world has universal application. Just like to conclude with, I think, one last thought, very briefly, is that perhaps we can take all the ideas that we saw today and really encapsulate them into one line. And I think that one line is the first line that we say when we wake up in the morning in Source 48. We say, Moda'ani, I gratefully thank you, O living and eternal King, for you have returned my soul within me with compassion. And we know when we say Moda'ani that we pause at the words Bechemla, with compassion. And the last phrase, and here you have the dash that expresses in the Art Scroll Stone Chumash, is a phrase in its own right. Rabba emunatecha, abundant is your faithfulness. And as the Art Scroll Stone Chumash points out, the Art Scroll Siddur points out in 49, a Jew opens his eyes and thanks God for restoring his faculties to him in the morning. Then he acknowledges that God did so in the expectation that he will serve him. Rabba emunatecha, I think when we wake up every morning, we need to keep this in mind. Great is God's faithfulness in us, which means, as we've seen today, that God believes in us. It doesn't mean he has faith, he believes in us alone. He believes in us to the extent that he is returning our souls to us. He's returning all our faculties to us and saying, I believe in you, now make something of yourself today. I believe in you, now here, take the gifts that I'm giving you, to be able to walk, to see, to talk, to function. Take all those abilities and go out and create yourselves, create your families, create the world, the society that's around you. This is your job. Go out and accomplish something. And I think our response to Rabbi Munasech is, yes, God, I understand that you have tremendous faith in me. You have invested so much within me. I am going to respond by going going out today and living a life which is living up to this potential that you believe in me. You've created me with so much, my response of the day is also emuna. I believe in you, God. Not only do you believe in me, but I believe in you. And my whole day, when I develop myself on all these levels, is not to lose focus of why I'm here. When I develop myself on these three levels the Rebbe was talking about, I understand I'm doing it in the context of that triangle of knowledge of God, of implementing that knowledge in my life, and then being able to realize I need to bring it back to you, God, and to live a life where you feel God's faith in you, and we act on our daily lives, understanding that faith we have in God, and living a life of the triangle of implementing these ideas in a relationship with God.